Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning, friends. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. We are off to a good start this morning. Did you know that today, of course, is 3:16? And I always say, let's review John 3:16. Put that in your heart. Memorize it. Bind it around your neck. Write it on the tablet of your heart. Starting to sound like a Proverbs 3 person all of a sudden. But that's where that comes from. And it's good to have that verse ready to go. And then when you have that verse ready to go, are we taking advantage of little opportunities like St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, which is 3:17? And do you ever engage in people? Do you ever use those days as opportunities to say, what do you know about St. Patrick's? Especially if you ask someone who really loves St. Patrick's Day to say, well, what do you know about him? Did you know that he wasn't even Irish? And did you know that St. Patrick's Day is the day we're honoring his death? And did you know he was more or less a Roman evangelist? He was returned to Ireland when he was about 40 years old and evangelized most of the country and wanted to see people come to faith in Christ. But he was never officially canonized by Rome. So although we call him St. Patrick, it's with a small s. So it's a very interesting story, yet I sometimes think we lose opportunities to take days like St. Patrick's Day and create conversation with people. We can engage people in our everyday conversations, and you can wish them happy St. Patrick's Day. No one's going to really be offended about that, I don't think anyway. But it also gives you an opportunity to say, what do you know about St. Patrick? You can say, I'm not even Irish, because I'm not Irish. Matter of fact, I'm picking up my shirt at the dry cleaners today that says, do not kiss me, I'm not Irish. So I can't wait to wear that tomorrow. But we do have an opportunity to look for ways to build bridges, to always be mindful and look for places where we can connect to other people and tell them about our hope in Christ. But Patricius was a 16-year-old kid that got kidnapped and was taken to became a slave in Ireland for 6 years. And then when he was 40 years old, he said, what the heck, I'm going back. I'm going back to that country that enslaved me and terrorized me, and I'm going to tell them about Christ. And it's a great story and just a good reminder that we should take advantage of it. And if you've had opportunities to take advantage of days like St. Patrick's Day and you've got a good story to tell us, give us a call in the studio line at 1-877-933-2484. We're going to do this today and a little bit tomorrow for sure, but you can also call that line and leave a message on the voicemail, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow. So that's what we got planned for tomorrow. All right, here's a suspect accused of shooting two Detroit police officers in a jail. Police arrested this 60-year-old Raymond Durham last night after a massive manhunt that lasted 7 hours. Detroit Police Chief James Craig says the wounded officers are expected to recover. I don't know if I would want to be a police officer nowadays. There is so much, there's so many crazy people out there. And my guest, Larry Zimon, is a pastor at Faith Community Church, and he's also a chaplain for the Sheriff's Department. So he gets to go on those calls where there's a report that maybe there was a murder, and that's really scary. And when we come back, we're going to hear about some of the stories. We're going to hear about some of the law enforcement pressures and what it takes to serve and protect. So it's 7 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in a minute. Nine minutes after the hour, good morning. We always have to be grateful that there are men and women out there that are going to protect us, they're going to uphold the law, and they're going to keep our communities safe. And usually you feel pretty comforted when there's a police officer coming to your house to help you with something if there's been a problem. But there's also a lot of stress on police officers today and law enforcement officials. And I have on the studio line Larry Zimon. He's the pastor of missional work at Faith Community Church in Hudson, Wisconsin. And he's been a chaplain to the Sheriff's Department, so he gets to ride along and to be the first one on the scene of very difficult situations. And he gets a firsthand experience to be with these officers and live out their lives and hear their stories and connect with them. And so, Larry, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Bill. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much. So give us a little bit of historical and theological background to law enforcement.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, I have a bias. I greatly respect and have great affection for those who serve, but I think it's important for us to consider what's behind it all. So, you know, back in America's roots, our Declaration of Independence says we are endowed by God with certain unalienable rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so our country started with the desire to be free from the tyranny of oppressive governance, and it's built into the very DNA of who we are as Americans. Now, one of the challenges we face is how do we live with our freedoms in such a way that there's a common flourishing, that my neighbors are accounted for and allowed to flourish as well as myself, recognizing that they, too, have the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this is where the law comes in. Our law is really an attempt to try to find ways to live together in a way that provides mutual opportunity to live our lives out in a healthy fashion. So it's an attempt to regulate our lives so that we can peacefully coexist and succeed in life. So, for example, what may seem like an arbitrary number on a sign designed to make you late for an appointment today in the form of a speed limit sign, mm-hmm. it's really designed to ensure that everyone gets to their destination and go about their lives in a safe fashion. So the law seeks the welfare of everybody, and in doing so, it places restrictions on everybody. And sometimes we find those restrictions helpful, like the right turn on the red, which even though I have to stop, allows me the flexibility to take the turn on one hand, mm-hmm. to take the and the dreaded left turn on green arrow only, when I could easily and safely make it through the intersection because there's no one else around, but I still have to sit there unless I want to take the chance at a ticket.
Yeah.
And so behind the law, some would seem sublime, some would seem utterly silly, designed for our good and the good of our neighbor, is the law enforcement officer who is charged with executing the common good by the laws that govern our shared existence. Okay. And now behind that law and the law enforcement officer and the legislature that creates the law is God himself.
Mm-hmm.
Romans 13 says there's no authority except that which God's established. And the one who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has established. And Paul goes on to say that the authorities are God's servants for your good. Now, what if you find yourself on the wrong side of the law? Well, God's servant, in this case, the law enforcement officer, is God's servant as an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Why? For the common good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's just some of the, you know, kind of historical and theological underpinnings in all the complexities and the challenges we find ourselves today. But I just think it's important to
I think it's very important.
That as kind of a baseline.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting what you said. I mean, we do need to be constrained in order to live and to function and to coexist with each other, because you take the sin condition and bring that into the world.
Yeah.
And if you just let that go unfettered, there's a lot of trouble. All right, let's talk a little bit just about the complexity and the challenges of men and women that are in law enforcement today. I mean, you've been doing this for a while, so you can see how it's changed over the last decade, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, what law enforcement really they're doing is trying to protect sinners from one another.
Yeah, right.
They're in the business of keeping human depravity in check so that we don't make life miserable for one another.
Mm-hmm.
And our, one of our problems is, yeah, so it is complex. You know, they're dealing with issues of not only intentional wrongdoing, but unintentional wrongdoing, people with great mental health deficiencies that lead to behavior that becomes problematic, and yet they're not necessarily being malicious. And so law enforcement officers sometimes are part-time lawyers, part-time dispute managers, they're traffic cops, they're, you know, the roles they play, part social worker, depending on any given call, what's being asked of them is incredibly complex. So in sometimes calls that precede one another can really impact. So I had a situation here where we had a double homicide take place, and where a guy had to experience and see all sorts of hideous stuff, smell hideous smells, and struggle with all these things. And the next day, he goes, shows up, and he gets a call about someone putting a lawn sign on their lawn, and the person was acting like the world was over.
Oh, wow.
And the law enforcement officer said, I just wanted to throttle the person. Now, any other day, he would just say, you know, try to help them deal with the sign,
right,
and get on with the day. But given what they experienced right before, there was this whiplash, like, you think this matters? We got people getting killed. And, of course, it does matter. We do need a peaceful coexistence with signage and all that kind of stuff. But it's just a little bit of the complexity of, you know, what they can endure in any given day. Now, fortunately, the murders aren't that regular.
Yeah. Okay, Larry, I'm going to take a little break. When we come back, I have a lot more questions. So we'll be back with Larry Zeiman in just a minute. It is 15 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Minutes after the hour. Good morning, Bill Arnold here. I'm talking to Larry Zeiman. He is the chaplain for this St. Croix Sheriff's Department, among other things. He's a pastor of missional care at Faith Community Church in Hudson, Wisconsin. But Larry, when we talk about being a ride-along, when you are riding in the car with the sheriffs and you're going to a crime scene, maybe where there has been a murder, or you had to report to a family that there's been a car accident, death or something, and you're the frontline guy, what is that like?
Well, it's both terrible and wonderful. It's terrible in the sense that you're dealing with some of the most painful, difficult things going in life. But it's also wonderful, the privilege to be brought into something so raw and vital and painful, and just to be able to bring comfort and to walk with a family during a real hideous season of their lives.
Mm-hmm. And then do you get a lot of opportunity to have kind of long conversations with some officers when you're doing a ride-along about where they're at personally and what their stresses are and what their problems are? And do they come to you as sort of a spiritual mentor, and or do they kind of stay quiet? What do they do when they're in the car?
Well, it's a both and.
Okay.
Law enforcement, historically, they are rather slow to trust. Part of their challenge is they are dealing with like 3% of our population over and over, and they really get a skewed view of life,
mm-hmm.
Dealing with who they're dealing with for the most part. And it really, really takes a toll on them in terms of their view of life, a tendency towards cynicism, not seeing the good in things because they're so perpetually being exposed to the bad things that are going on. And in the ride-alongs, it varies. You know, like for us, some days you're talkative and want to talk about things that matter. Some days you want to chit-chat. It can gain the whole spectrum. But I think because they're slow to trust, a lot of what chaplains do is to establish relationships, a safe place, place where they're not going to be judged, where they're going to be valued, so that when the time comes they want to talk, or when they face a personal conflict or something that's really challenging, they have someone they can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the great advantages we have in chaplains is, by law, because we're ordained clergy, when we're alone in the car with a law enforcement officer, what they say is privileged. It doesn't need to go any further.
Mm-hmm. Larry, as a Christian now, and I want to connect to law enforcement in a supportive, encouraging way. And you say they're slow to trust. I mean, how do we as Christians, how do we relate to law enforcement?
Sure. I would say a few things you could do is just express thanks when you're given the opportunity to do so. When you get pulled over for speeding, don't come up with a bunch of
excuses. What do you mean speeding, Larry?
Yeah.
I don't speed.
Yeah. Well, you're a better man than I am.
Thank you.
So, when next time I get pulled over, it's been a while. what I'm gonna say, it's about time.
Yeah.
And
what took you so long, huh?
Yeah. So I am. So to express gratitude, another one is most of them really care deeply about their families, and their very job tears against the family. So if you can invest in their families in a way that is life-giving, I think that would matter. If you could establish a relationship just to let them know you're thinking of them, you're praying for them, would be a value. But I would say, like, if you have a neighbor, for someone in law enforcement to experience someone outside of law enforcement and someone who's not in the system in some negative way, the more positive touches you give, I think that's just be really helpful for their frame of mind and their worldview.
Mm-hmm. Larry, what might they like hearing from a person like myself? I mean, let's say I walk into Subway and they're in line two, and I just was going to say something. What would you suggest?
Sure.
What would they like hearing?
Well, just to say, you know, simple, hey, good morning, officer. Good to see you today. Thanks for what you do. I know your job must be really tough, and I'm really grateful. If you get someone that you bump into someone with a little bit of regularity, they might know who you are,
mm-hmm.
you know, to say, you know, I'm not sure if you're aware, but I'm a believer, and I pray for you. Is there something particular going on in your job these days that's really frustrating? I could pray for you or for your family.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge is a portion of them will look at you like, what? And yet there are a number who are would be willing to share something like that. But you know, actually just treat them like people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and don't ask them if they shot anyone. When was the last time they pulled their gun or taser out? Keep things at a simple level. Those when a law enforcement officer has to use force, it is a life altering experience for them, and they do not like it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really painful experience for most of them.
Yeah, it takes a tremendous toll to protect and serve, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And they pay a price in things like for every law enforcement officer who loses their life in the line of duty, at least two take their own lives.
Wow.
Because of the toll of, you know, some of them for decades are seeing only the worst. And what happens is that their life on the street, which requires hypervigilance and focus and kind of a negative bent, turning that off when you come home is really difficult.
Oh, I bet.
And yeah, so it's really challenging relationally.
Mm-hmm.
And their families pay a price along with them. And so one of the things we try to do here in St. Croix County is occasionally we do like seminars to try to help the cops and their families work through some of these things because it's very real.
Yeah, because they have to show force and use restraint, and that's kind of an interesting combination. And if you have an ego and you're getting snubbed at work or your supervisor or you have to tell the guy with the lawn sign to take it down after you just witnessed a double murder homicide, I can imagine your emotions are all over the map.
And so some of them are adrenaline junkies.
Oh yeah.
Which is part of what we need, you know, for the right time.
Yeah.
And it is really complex. And they need to show restraint when they don't want to. And then given the climate today, there might be times when they need to do it. They're becoming more hesitant to get involved because of all the negative publicity that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's deserved.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they make mistakes just like every other field, except theirs is more grand, the scale of what they do.
Yeah, Larry, I don't know what it's like to be an adrenaline junkie. I just host a morning radio show.
Oh, yeah, well, it doesn't get you much more exciting than that.
Thanks for being a guest on the show. Have a great week.
Yeah, good talking to you,
Bill. Thanks so much. 26 Bye. Minutes after the hour, we'll take a little break and be right back. Minutes after the hour, up next, a great faith in action story with my friend Terry Esau. We'll be back in a minute. Sometimes we need extra motivation in doing what God calls us to do. Lee Cummings has some thoughts on this.
So many times we want either somebody else to do it, or maybe we don't feel like it, but sometimes we just need to be more motivated by God's heart for other people and let our attitude and let our heart catch up to it as we're in motion than sitting around and waiting to feel, quote, led. You know, Jonah did it. Jonah responded and he went to Nineveh and there was great fruitfulness. I can't help but think, you know, latest statistics I was just reading the other day that said that over 85% of Christians in America have never invited anybody to church. But yet 80% of unchurched people say that if they were invited by someone that they know, that they would go to church.
Wow. Now to find that full interview, go to our website at myfaithradio.com. You know, sometimes you need extra motivation in doing what God calls you to do. And my next guest coming up took action on that. We'll be back in just a minute with Terry Usaw.
Literature was never my best subject, but I've always been fond of the quote by Oscar Wilde, "If you want to tell people the truth, make them laugh. Otherwise, they'll kill you." Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When parents ask me how I've survived through living with more than 2,600 troubled teens, my answer is always laughter. It diffuses stress, it short-circuits anger, and it provides a healthy way to blow off steam. Is there tension brewing under your roof today? Try watching a comedy together as a family. Find a clean comedian you all enjoy. Post funny cartoons on the refrigerator or text jokes to each other, if that's what it takes to get a chuckle. Proverbs 17:22 says a cheerful heart is good medicine. So lighten up and laugh.
For more great tips from Mark Gregston, go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org. ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Minutes after the hour, you have two guys that lurk in a coffee shop without home offices or jobs for that matter. They run into each other. And that was the case a couple weeks ago when I ran into Terry Usaw. And Terry is an author and a musician and an all-around great guy. And he did take some motivation that God gave him. He did what God called on him to do. And he's got quite a story of a faith in action. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, good morning.
Is that what we do? We lurk around
coffee
shops?
We lurk in coffee shops. Yes, we do, because I ran into you. You were lurking. I was lurking.
Well, when you don't have an office, but Caribou is, you know, you've got 100 offices around the Twin Cities,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Now, I want to talk about a number of things. I want to revisit the Blue Collar God, White Collar God, a book you wrote years ago. And
you're going way back.
I want to go way back, because that was actually one of my first introductions to your mind and your thought process. And I want you to tell our listeners, just bring them up to speed on that.
Well, Blue Collar God, White Collar God was a book I wrote, what was this, like around the turn of the century.
Yeah, around that time.
And it was a collection of short stories, you know, that put God in metaphorical situations, like he was a garbage man. He was, you know, and basically showed up at our curb to pick up our trash. So it was really a story about forgiveness. So the whole book is a collection of stories like that. And it was a two-sided book where one side was called Blue Collar God, and it showed how basically God, through Jesus, got dirt under his fingernails to bring us home. And then you actually had to flip the book over and read it from the other way. And that was the White Collar God side. And it was kind of these metaphorical stories of this galactic CEO, you know, who was way beyond, and yet he still was doing everything he could to bring us back home. So it's kind of an odd book, but
took me 8 months to figure out how to flip that over and read the other side.
I should have put instructions in the intro, maybe.
Well, there was another book on the other side. I don't get it. So I was very confused.
Yeah.
But obviously the whole ambition was for you to figure out how to show the world that God did come down and make himself accessible to us and be just like us.
Exactly.
And that every time we have an opportunity to connect to somebody, whether it be whoever in our world of influence, that person is God-like in a way, and we have an opportunity to connect to them and maybe share our faith and hope with them.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Then God put a little bug in your ear to do something pretty remarkable, which started in about, what, 2008?
2008, yeah. It was the launch of Free Bikes for Kids.
Now, please, take your time explaining this, because I think this is incredible.
Well, I'm a bikeaholic, first
yes.
of all.
How many miles? How many miles do you bike?
You know, it isn't as much as it used to be, because I used to race.
Okay.
I was kind of a Lance Armstrong wannabe.
Yeah.
Except I wasn't doping.
Right.
And also I was a lot slower than him. but yeah, I probably, during my racing time, I'd ride 4,000 or 5,000 miles a year or in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's maybe half that.
Okay.
I'm old and I don't race anymore.
Right.
But you're
doping now too.
Yeah. Can you say that?
No, I don't think you can. We'll edit that out. Yeah, we'll edit that out.
Okay. Is there a 7-second delay on this?
Of course there is. But coffee is, you know, that to me, that's our caffeine. That's our drug.
Yeah. So when I was 12, I got a paper out because you got paid to ride your bike. And then my brother and I, a little bit later, we'd build these ramps and we'd collect neighborhood kids and we'd make them lie down in the street and we'd see how many kids we could jump over with our bikes on our ramps.
Hilarious.
Which worked well until my brother missed once. Put an end to that.
Yeah.
Then when I was 16, my buddy and I, the day that school let out in summer, in spring, we got on our bikes and we started riding west till we hit the ocean. And then we turned around and rode back, basically made a summer of it. And it was the greatest summer ever.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kind of got sucked up in my music career for 20 years and really was less about the bike. And then I started getting back into it again, and I started a bike club that meets in my driveway on Saturday mornings. And one day I got a call and this guy said, "Hey, I know a family in your area struggling financially." It was like 3 weeks till Christmas. Said, "Would one of your buddies have a bike they could give this kid?" I said, "Well, let me check." I called like four guys and every one of them had a bike.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, every garage I go into, I see bikes sitting there collecting dust,
mm-hmm.
kids' bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So I called up Care 11, which I had done all of Care 11's music themes for their news shows and stuff for like 25 or 30 years.
You mean
you
wrote the music for their themes, their shows?
Yes. Yeah. So that was my career was in the music business.
Okay.
As you know, I wrote music for I've done music for commercials for Target and Pepsi and McDonald's and Harley's and Golden Grahams and kitty litter.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm just playing dumb for the listeners. So you can tell the story.
And by the way, you're doing an
Thank
excellent
you.
job.
I don't appreciate that, Terry, at all. Okay, continue.
So I went on Care 11 and I said, "Hey, donate your used bikes to me and my cycling club and we're going to fix them up and give them to kids in need." And in 2 weeks, we got 250 bikes. We fixed them up, gave them away. And my friend said, "That's fun. Let's do it again next year." So we started a little earlier and we gave away 750. And my friend said, "That's fun. Let's do it again next year." And we gave away 1,500. And I said, "This is fun, but it's turning into a job."
Yeah, no kidding.
So I said, "Let's form a nonprofit, get a board. I'll see if I can find some corporate sponsors." And the next year, we gave away 5,000 bikes. And we have now been giving away 5,000 to 6,000 bikes every year here in the Twin Cities for 6 years, and we've given away 38,000 bikes. So this little hobby fluke thing has turned into something a little bigger.
Now, where do you house all these bikes, and what is the process if a bike comes in and it needs a little bit of spit shining and a little bit repair and the derailleur's off? So how does that all that work?
They all need that, by the way. It's kind of interesting. We're a 60-day input to output cycle. So we are only active for 2 months out of the year, and we basically collect all of our bikes in one day. So the first Saturday in October is our metro-wide bike collection. And 2 years ago, we set the Guinness World Record. We collected 5,512 bikes in one day, actually in four hours. Yeah, and then since we're only 2 months out of the year, we don't own any space. So I run around the Twin Cities and beg people to donate a huge warehouse space to me every year. And the last 2 years, the Mall of America has given us about 65,000, 70,000 square feet. So we've actually set up the world's largest bike shop for 2 months right at the Mall of America.
Mm-hmm.
So then, then we bring in thousands of volunteers to help our short staff that we hire for a seasonal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last year we had 4,500 volunteers came in over those 2 months. So for 2 months, we clean and repair, refurbish the bikes, and then the beginning of December, we give them all away.
Mm-hmm. What a great little faith in action story. All right, Terry, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I would like for you to have a little jingle ready for me for the morning show here. we'll see just
give me,
how...
We'll give me some keywords.
Just what, how good you are. I don't know. Keywords.
You want.
Bill Arnold still has the job today, at least. Okay?
All right.
Be back in just a minute. Forty-eight minutes after the hour, we're talking to Terry Esau, and our lesson today from our Impact Audio was from Lee Cummings, who said sometimes we need extra motivation in doing what God calls us to do. Terry, I'm guessing that you had this idea. Was it seemed like kind of a no-brainer for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I try in my life to be responsive. I always talk about the Holy Spirit as an enormous elbow,
mm-hmm.
and our job is to keep tender ribs. So
right.
His job is to elbow us in the ribs, and our job is to respond. So, you know, things come, and, you know, I did write a follow-up book called Surprise Me, which was looking for God's surprises in our day, or basically recognizing getting the nudge from the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to respond to those because, quite honestly, life is way more interesting when you're sensitive to God's, you know, God's leading, because he's got some cool things planned for us. And I'm going, well, if I actually react to that, something cool might come out of it. And,
yeah.
And in the process, I'm going to have fun. Makes
yes.
life an adventure, you know?
Yes. Because I always think nothing is inconsequential in God's economy. Even if it's
right.
a 5-second meet or a brief encounter, and then that person shows up in your life again in 2 years later, and you go, I just met that person for 5 seconds one day, and that how God will
yeah.
piece stuff together if, like you say, you just keep your ribs tender.
Yeah, and the thing is that if you don't, it's like you never know where a story might have led. You know, it's like when my friend called me and said, hey, we know this family that's struggling financially. Could you give this kid a bike? You know, if I would have gotten sidetracked and forgotten about it, you know, 38,000 kids at this point would have, well, you know, that sounds arrogant. Forgive
no, but
me.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, the thing is that I think God is sitting there waiting to write stories through us. And if we don't react to the first line of the story, you know, you never know where that story would have led. And sometimes I go, man, I wonder what have we missed out on when we don't have those tender ribs and when we don't act on those nudges?
Well, usually we have a lot of missed opportunities and a lot of boredom, because I think that when you take a step of faith and you think, I think God might be nudging me here, you're obviously instantly thrust into some discomfort zone where...
Yeah.
I'm calling a friend of mine going, you got an extra bike? I got this family. I don't know. I'm going to have to clean it up and get it over there. And, ooh, I might feel weird taking it over there, but I think they want it. And, you know, it's a little
yeah.
bit of a discomfort zone, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's about taking risk.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Jesus, he didn't lead a risk-free life. And I don't think we're called to comfort and security. And quite honestly, comfort and security could be horribly boring, you know? I mean, I think sometimes we get way too sucked into that sort of thinking. And really, it's not in our best interest. It's not in the world's best interest. And it's boring. Come on, let's live interesting, exciting, risk-taking lives, I think.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Jesus start every opportunity he had with meeting a need of some kind? I mean, every time
yeah.
he encountered somebody, he met a need. Now, can you imagine? Go back to when you were a kid and you got your bike. how important was your bike to you as a kid? It was everything.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, a bike is freedom.
Yes.
A bike is, you know, it's the first, it's the ownership that you have between your teddy bear and your car, you know?
It is.
You know, it's the main thing that you own, unless you get a guitar, and then that's the main thing.
But, yeah.
You know, it's one of those deals, so you just got to go for it.
Okay, tell me more about the Surprise Me, the follow-up book.
Surprise Me, I just got this idea, you know, what would it look like if I woke up every morning and started my day with a three-word prayer, Surprise Me, God, but not Surprise Me with a new Escalade or mm-hmm. you know, something like that, but Surprise Me, God, with whatever it is you want to bring into my life today. And then I decided to keep a journal of those 30 days when I was praying that prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and actually that journal got published as a book called Surprise Me by Nav Press. And it was, you know, it was a really interesting 30 days for me. Not all the kind of things you would want. Like one day we were driving down the road and my wife was sitting next to me and she goes, you know what? You're selfish.
No,
crap. You mean now I have to write about that in this book?
Yeah.
So, you know, so I did, but that's, you know, I think if you actually invite God into your day and then open your spiritual eyes and look for him throughout the day, he's going to show up in ways that, that will surprise you. They won't always be the kind of surprises you want, but they'll probably be the kind of surprises you need. And, you know, that was the experience that I had. So it's an interesting read, I think.
So an inconvenience might be brilliantly disguised as an opportunity that God's trying to surprise you with.
Always. Yeah. It's rarely convenient, but, you know, how many really great things in life are convenient?
Like zero. It seems that way.
Yeah.
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 So you've 38,000 bikes. It's a great story. It's a great faith and action story. I bet you've had several opportunities. I know you have because I've heard you speak before to kind of give your faith side of the of how this has changed you and how it's strengthened your walk with the Lord, which I think is great.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's really life is pretty simple. It's, you know, when they ask Jesus, well, what's the greatest commandment? He goes, well, love God, love your neighbor. It's not complicated. And for me, I look at it and go, I think if you're going to love your neighbor, you need to find ways to tangibly do it. You can't just talk about, you know, just say, oh, I love you. You know, we should find tangible ways to show that love. And for me, being a bikeaholic, I thought the bike is something that's really important for a kid to have. And we could help solve that problem because there are millions of kids in the U.S. without bikes. But it was as simple as saying, how would Jesus, you know, here's one way that Jesus might love these kids. You know, the bike wasn't invented yet back in his day.
Mm-hmm.
I actually,
you don't know that.
I'm trying to picture now Jesus going, you know, the road to Emmaus. What if he'd been riding a bike?
Yeah. I love it.
I kind of want to go there right now, but I probably shouldn't.
We probably should because we're out of time. But Terry, thanks so much for being on the show. And as we both lurk in coffee shops, I'm sure we'll run into each other again soon.
Yeah, go check out Free Bikes for Kids online, fb4k.org, freebikesforkids.org.
We'll put that up on the website so people can reference that. So thanks very much. Hey, a great day.
Good to reconnect with you, Bill.
Thanks, Terry.
You're a good dude. It's always fun talking.
Appreciate it. All right, 56 minutes after the hour, we'll be right back. Really a great story of a couple in North Carolina received a quick answer to a prayer to save their baby daughter's life when a word of a heart donor came just moments after leaving the church. The church got together and they prayed over this little girl. When they left the church, they got a call that a donor match was found. And the mom said, if this isn't a God moment, I don't know what could be. And this little girl just celebrated her first birthday, and the doctors say the family is doing great. God does answer prayer. If you have a faith in action story, a little bit like Terry's, you can call our studio line, 1-877-933-2484. Leave a message, and we'll share it with our listeners if you like. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.